Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Venna. Before we begin today's show, I'd like to take a moment to invite you to join me at Accelerate Finance 2025. This year's event takes place in Las Vegas from May 12th to 15th and features a dedicated track for CFOs and aspiring executives, plus keynotes and panels with finance leaders who are redefining what's possible in FP&A. Visit acceleratesummit.com to get your ticket and learn more. Imagine a world where your tax department isn't just a cost center, but a key driver of business strategy and innovation. Sound far-fetched? With cutting-edge technologies like GenAI, the role of tax is dramatically transforming from a back-office function to a strategic partner for the business. Joining us to discuss how companies can recognize and leverage the true strategic potential of their tax functions are Dave Helmer, EY Global Tax and Finance Operate Leader, and Darren Campbell, EY America's Tax Technology and Transformation Leader. Utilizing his background in both tax and computer science, Darren helps companies tackle their data challenges through the application of emerging technologies. And Dave assists companies at the C-suite and tax leadership level to develop the right strategy across the co-sourcing continuum. Dave and Darren, thank you so much for joining me today. Maybe I'll start with you, Dave. Could you just tell us a little bit about your background and what got you into tax and got you here today to be talking about this topic?
Well, thank you, Melissa. It's great to be with you today. I lead Ernst & Young's Global Tax and Finance Operate business. I work with companies in designing optimal operating models, looking at data, technology, and really the creating the future of the tax function. I've been with EY now 38 years, worked across our assurance practice, looked at sector, and then also have had Americas and global roles. And it's really neat to see the convergence of data and technology and really driving a lot of efficiency and effectiveness in the tax function.
And how about yourself, Darren? Can you tell us a bit about your background?
I lead our EY America's Tax Technology and Transformation practice. It's a team of about 1,500 individuals that are focused on helping our clients transform their tax function, both looking at the operating model as well as looking at the data and technology that helps drive an effective tax function. I've been at this for about 27 years. My educational background was in tax. I have a master's degree in accounting with emphasis in tax, but I took all my electives in school in the computer science department. My entire career has really been focused on the data technology side of tax, and have been involved in the buildup of our tax technology teams throughout the years here at EY.
Excellent. So when we tend to think about tax, it's not always the first thing that comes to mind in terms of business strategy. And yet there's been this evolution that has happened, at least in for certain in my career when I started and what I knew of tax. I wasn't in the tax group, but I certainly worked close with tax groups. How do you think that that has evolved and the role that tax is starting to play when it comes to business strategy?
Yeah, I'd say there's been a big migration in that change. When I first started in the 80s, tax was a cost center, and then it moved into looking at managing risk. And then today you see a real heavy focus on driving more value in the finance function while also managing risk. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunities now to reuse data and do a lot of planning. And also, tax is a real big steward of the data. So when new things are evolving, tariff, trade, et cetera, tax actually has a lot of the data that can do the modeling for the finance function to know the after-tax impact of any of these changes.
And it's interesting, we talk a lot on this show about the importance of finance partnering with the rest of the business, and that partnership and the skill sets that are required that come with partnership. And similarly, I think that tax has also grown in terms of the importance of partnership. It's not just a sit in the back room and do the tax returns, look at the numbers and interact with as few people as possible. In fact, it is possibly quite the opposite. How have you seen that partnership both within finance and with the rest of the business evolve?
Melissa, as you talked about the way that tax has evolved, I often describe it as it attacks. We used to be archaeologists digging through the dirt of all the transactions in a company, trying to find the little shards of pottery and interpret how those, how tax apply, tax rules applied to those events, those business events. It was always work that was done long after the event occurred. And what's really created this shift and this drive that's also created the need to have tighter alignment is the speed of taxes increasing. So the regulators are coming out with new rules and reporting a requirement that is requiring the reporting to be closer to the time of the transaction. And then the other part is it's now technologically possible. Where before things were very manual, a lot of paper-driven processes, it was difficult for tax to be near time or real time. And we're seeing that shift as well. So it's both kind of a regulatory impact as well as something that's being made possible by the advances of technology. The importance of tax connecting with finance is tax is really embedded in all parts of the finance operation. So if we look at something like order to cash, we have things like intercompany sales that impact the federal income tax. The segregation of jurisdictions is important for things like state and local taxes. And then you have transaction taxes such as sales and use and VAT that are also tied in with those finance processes. And if you're able to bring them together and team more closely, tax is able to be more of a strategic business partner. If you keep those separate, there's a lot of additional costs that are required for tax to gather all the information that they need. And we're back to where we were historically, where we're looking at things as they happened in the past, as opposed to closer to the time of the transaction when tax can be a strategic business partner.
To add on that too, where tax is working closely within the organization with all of the digital real-time filings now and the interactions with the regulatory authorities, right? There's a lot of working day-to-day, both in preparing for your filings and then also dealing to responses. So this ecosystem has actually grown and gotten more real-time, you know, over the last few years.
Well, and it's interesting when you talk about that closing of that gap of time in that it does need to be really more real-time. One, I think it helps avoid a cleanup later on because you've gone down and created a bit of a mess that could have been easily avoided. But also, things are changing so fast and furious. You know, right now, even I think about, you know, even changes happening between countries and tariffs and taxes. And like, there's a lot happening very quickly, and tax is needing to be running alongside all of this, helping to inform from their side. It's a critical person to having a seat at the table. But I think even barring the current what's happening, that importance of that seat at the table comes to matter. How have you seen tax roles that are running really efficiently and effectively earning that seat at the table? Because I think there's probably still some companies where tax may be thought of later and aren't getting invited in sooner. How do you think tax goes about getting that seat?
I think one of the biggest things is really shifting, helping shift the view of tax from being a compliance and reporting center to really the value add contribution. And so in a lot of the discussions as we're working with tax in helping them prepare some of the business cases or prepare for some of the discussions with the C-suite, tying into the value that tax can bring to the organization. So, and some of that is you touched on it a little bit. One of the biggest priorities for CFOs today is a focus on cost cutting. How do they reduce cost? If you're trying to fix things on the back end, there's a lot more costs involved in trying to remediate it on the back end versus being able to fix it on the front end. And in many of the transformations that companies are going through, tax can be a pay for. So it can actually help reduce some of the costs by eliminating shadow tax activities. There's some tax credits that are available that can be taken advantage of in a transformation. And if done right, there's also tax planning opportunities where you can help retain, you know, pay the right amount of tax. So you're retaining cash in-house as opposed to having that leave the organization and have to file for refunds and get it back later.
I also see tax driving more value today when they can focus on their operating model, driving more efficiency and more effectiveness. Some of the key elements to that is having the data and having a good data strategy, and then driving a lot of automation to free up the tax function to really double down on strategic activities, looking at planning, looking at controversy, and really driving the high value activities. And we're continuing to see a lot of companies want to double the amount of time they spend on these strategic activities. And you see this evolution around the operating model, looking at automation, looking at shared service centers, and then driving more value with the team that you have in place.
And Darren, can you share some examples of how you've seen some of that tax efficiency and cost savings come to fruition in companies?
Yeah, a couple examples. One is, in many organizations, the tax function really isn't that large. There's not a lot of people in tax, so is there a lot of opportunity to create efficiencies? Where the opportunity lies, though, is there's a lot of shadow tax opportunity activities that happen across the finance organization. So I have one client that I'm working with that they have a tax function of about 30 people. But as we've gone in and reviewed their overall operating model, there's about 150 FTEs within the finance organization that are doing tax work. And a lot of it gets to what Dave talked about. It is around the data collection or transformation or kind of reporting, some of that prep activities that's needed that is sent over to tax. But it's a prime example of an area where you can go after, if it's done right and brought up front, then a lot of those back-end activities don't need to take place. And so those individuals, you know, they can be repurposed to other activities. They can focus on their finance activities, and tax has the information and access to the information it needs to be able to help provide planning opportunities and additional cost reduction for a company.
That's a startling number when you think about how much that the shadow work, how big that can get, and you're probably not even aware of it. Now, something else that's top of mind for lots of companies is supply chain. Dave, do you have examples where tax can help with supply chain and thinking about strategies around that?
It's a great topic, right? Every transaction, every move in your supply chain needs to have an after-tax view. Right now, you hear a lot about tariff and changes, you know, on tax rates in different countries, and companies need to be in a position to analyze and pivot quickly, and having that data to be able to model that out, to know the after-tax implications, is so critically important. You look at all the legislative and regulatory change happening around the world, companies need to be able to understand how that's going to impact their supply chain. You also see a lot in the transactions area, right? As we expect transactions to pick up, and you're going to have mergers, acquisitions, spinoffs, to understand the after-tax implications of that will be critical. And what sits at the center of that is having the data, having the tax attributes, and being able to model all of these changes. So I think as we look at all the changes happening in the global economy today, having that data, being able to look at your supply chain and quickly understand the after-tax implications is going to be critical for companies.
Well, and it's interesting because you've touched on data, and that comes up in so many places across the org, especially when I think about artificial intelligence and other teams being able to help make good data-driven decisions. It all comes together in having a holistic view of, okay, how are we going to approach our data strategy, and tax also being a part of that. You know, you can supercharge a lot of parts of the business if you think more broadly about it instead of siloed, even on something as simple as data. Not that it's simple, but I think that's often a forgotten partner when you're thinking about your data strategy. Let's pivot over a little bit now into some of the top challenges that are facing tax teams today. Dave, what are you hearing as the biggest challenges that are being talked about?
Yeah, I think probably the most significant challenge we're seeing today is cost pressures. We've just surveyed 1,600 CFOs and VPs of tax, and they came back and said the single biggest challenge that we're facing right now is cost pressures. And the number one reason that we'll fail to achieve our mission and vision are these cost pressures. We've surveyed over 8,000 CFOs and VPs of tax, and this is the first time cost was, you know, number one on that list. I think it's a function of inflation, but continued cost cuts over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, all of that compounding. We also found that cost and budget management was the number one priority of the tax function, with cash tax planning being number two. So it's all right now a heavy focus on cost management, and also though how tax can drive more to the bottom line with more effective planning to drive, you know, strong cash flow and better earnings.
Excellent. Makes a lot of sense, because we hear that as a theme in multiple parts of the organization. So definitely coming to bear. How do these cost considerations then start to impact the effectiveness of the tax function? Because this can become a bit of a double-edged sword when you think about how you might approach this, but there could be risks created depending how you go about that.
Companies today are taking a step back and looking at their operating model and saying, how can I drive a more efficient function? Do I work with a service provider from an outsourcing standpoint where they've invested heavily in data, technology, delivery methods? Or do I want to build that internally and drive more automation through the use of a shared service center, data strategies, new technologies? The key in today's environment is to take the routine compliance matters and automate those, to take the smaller team that you have, to free them up to focus on the very strategic things, planning, controversy, and being that value-added partner to the finance organization as well as the business overall.
You touched a bit on the speed of change earlier. How is that affecting the way companies are going about their tax planning and their compliance?
Tremendous speed in today's environment. We talked earlier about all of the digital real-time filings that are emerging all over the world. Tax functions need to be very, very nimble. And how we see companies approaching that is having a good data strategy and enabling that with technology so they can reuse the data. You think about the data, the same financial data is being used in the income tax provision that's flowing into the statutory accounting, which then ends up being the tax return and then all the follow-up with the authorities. So if I can get that data organized and reuse it and have it at my fingertips, I'm going to save a ton of time, right? Historically, companies have operated in the silos where each of the teams pick up the data, they do something with it, and they put it down. And Darren's an expert at this, of how you can build that model to integrate it, reuse it, drive tremendous amounts of efficiency. And then you're able to focus on the things that matter and the high value activities. I also see a lot of companies working with service providers who have also built high scale automation, leveraging data to provide that reuse. So it gets to the build versus buy. Do I want to invest and build that internally, or do I want to work with a provider who has that? But either way, the bottom line is you need to drive that automation for your routine compliance matters to free up time to focus on the value add.
When we do tax function assessments and we review where people are spending their time, as a general range, we're finding that people spend 40 to 60% of their time in the tax function dealing with data. Tax is one of the heaviest users of data in an organization, but the challenge is we don't own or control any of those source systems. So it's tax ends up being a feeder, kind of downstream receiver of data that was really prepared for other purposes. And oftentimes it needs to be recombined. It may have, some of the data points may have been together upstream in the process. And this is really another example or reason why it's important for tax to really be embedded tightly with finance, is finance and IT understand how tax is going to use the data downstream. Then they can make sure that data doesn't get split apart that may be needed to help drive some of those determinations. But again, in looking at that, the efficiencies and the challenge around that, 40 to 60% of time of the overall tax function is often spent dealing with gathering, collecting, transforming data.
it makes sense that cost is absolutely a key challenge, how to deal with our data. We've heard from time to time talent. We certainly hear that in other places in the business. What are you seeing when it comes to talent, and how big or of a challenge or not is that for tax?
Over my career, I think this is the most pressure I've seen on talent within the tax function. That's really, I think, driven by a number of factors. Number one, not enough accountants overall entering the industry, right? So we've seen a real downtick in the amount of people wanting to study accounting, come into the accounting industry. We've also seen now the retirement of the baby boomers. So many of these people who have been in accounting for a long time are looking to retire. Interesting stat, 75% of the CPAs in the U.S. hit retirement age in 2019. So you have it from both ends, not enough accountants entering the industry. And then you also have a lot of people retiring. And you also see new skill sets and new knowledge that these professionals need to have. Number one, they need to be good with data. They need to be good with process, and they need to be good with technology. So in addition to having all of those needs around tax technical, they need to develop all of these other skills. And then also with the use of data and technology and working with third-party providers, we're hearing from a lot of our clients that we need to help develop problem solving, critical thinking, communication, and these other skill sets that maybe people learned earlier in their career working on all the compliance. So you see this real convergence around talent coupled with the cost pressures and trying to balance all of that, having a plan around talent and looking at where you're at today, where you need to be. How do you work with providers? How do you leverage Gen AI and matters like that is really critically important.
Well, and it's interesting because I feel like the profession is a little misunderstood at the moment in that I think it's the most exciting time to be in the profession in my career. And yet we're having this issue attracting talent. And I think we've got to do something to help it be better understood and rebrand, because all of these things you're talking about, those soft skills, dealing with data, driving your business, helping business decisions, this stuff is at the heart and we can play such a big role, but it's not quite understood, I think. And so one of the things there's optimism around as well alongside this is artificial intelligence. And so what are you hearing from CFOs when it comes to AI and how that might also help with the tax function?
We've seen a huge interest in Gen AI and looking at how a Gen AI can solve these problems around cost and talent and staying on top of all the regulatory change. Interestingly, in the survey that we had administered by Oxford Economics, 1,600 CFOs and VPs of tax, 9 in 10 said Gen AI is going to have a significant impact on the overall effectiveness and efficiency of the tax function. And that's a huge uptick from the prior year, where it was only 15% of the companies thought it was going to have an impact. So we've seen this huge uptick. Everybody knows it's going to be big, and everybody's trying to get their head around, how do I get started and how can I leverage AI? I'm using AI daily myself and probably saving an hour or two with PowerPoint presentations, email, and I'm finding it from an overall productivity standpoint really valuable, freeing me up to have more time to work on strategic activities also.
An hour or two in a day, that changes the game when you think about the ripple effect of that. Dave, how are you seeing Gen AI impact various aspects of the tax function?
It's a great question. I see Gen AI actually hitting all parts of the tax function. It's hitting data cleansing and acquisition. Darren talked about how important it is to get the data right on the front end versus having to clean it up later. So it's having a big impact on data overall, getting it ready for your tax filings. It's impacting tax compliance, having a big impact on those things that require a lot of iteration, and speed's important, like the income tax provision, very helpful also on controversy, predicting controversy, but then dealing with the authorities to provide the information. And then, as we had noted, overall productivity. If I can save an hour or two a day, summarizing emails, documenting procedures, that's going to free me up to focus on the higher value activities. So I see Gen AI impacting all parts of the tax function, and we're still early days. I'm extremely optimistic on, you know, what it's going to be doing for tax overall.
We've talked about what AI can do. It's an exciting time, but then we've got the need for the data to be clean or to set out the right foundation for that. Darren, when we think about that, what are some of the key considerations companies should have when starting to be able to get ready for that?
In thinking about the challenge with data, as I mentioned, tax is a heavy consumer but doesn't own any of the source system. So data is coming in from a lot of different places in an organization. And one of the largest challenges that companies are faced with today, tax in particular, is data is siloed, or it's trapped in different parts of the organization. So it's trapped in a file in someone's email or on their hard drive. While there's lots of data in the organization, it's just not accessible. So I think one of the key considerations is really coming together with a strategy of how you make the data accessible to be able to benefit from AI, to also be available when you need to do the regulatory reporting that we talked about earlier. I think back to the four V's of big data that was talked about, which is volume, velocity, variety, and veracity. And these all are some of the key considerations. So on the volume side, this gets back to what I was talking about of how data is siloed and how can you make it accessible. The velocity, we've talked about that already as well. The speed at which we need the data is increasing. Tax is also important to understand the timing of the data as well. When you're getting ready to, when you need to do a filing, there is a timestamp on that, what needs to be included in consideration. So there's kind of a speed component. How quickly can you access all that information, as well as understanding what data should you be considering for a particular reporting or planning opportunity that you might be doing. The other is also looking at the variety of data that we deal with. In tax, two main types. There's the structured, kind of this information we're pulling out of tables, financial systems, but there's also a lot of things like contracts that need to be reviewed, or complex tax forms that have footnote items that historically that's been really challenging for tax to access. And AI, generative AI in particular, is helping us with access that information. The last is the veracity, which refers to the accuracy, the reliability. The other key consideration then is the reconciliation. How does the tax information that you now have, how does that tie back into your financial information and other information in the organization so that you are doing the planning or reporting based on accurate information?
What are the first steps that companies should take when even trying to then identify some use cases for AI in their tax function?
When I talk with companies, I talk about really three stages in that journey. And the first is what Dave highlighted is really these digital assistants. The personal productivity digital assistants is something that is really beneficial to an organization. AI is often felt as kind of a scary term. And the digital assistants is a way where people can get the individual productivity gains that Dave talked about. It also allows them to learn how to talk with AI, and very importantly, how to have critical thinking. So to understand the results that you're getting back, how do you question that? How do you do additional work to verify the response that you get back? So I view that as kind of the level one, is that digital assistant. The challenge with the kind of the digital assistant is it is difficult to compute an ROI. So Dave estimated it was an hour savings, but that's really difficult to quantify. What's really the cost benefit of that? It's kind of harder to quantify, but people can feel the impact. The second phase is where you begin to identify and prioritize some of the point solutions that you can put into place, where you identify some of the pilot programs. Generally, what we do with companies is we talk through some of their processes. Most organizations, they already have an idea of where some of their bigger pain points are. We often start with those. It's always a process and technology, because we from the Lean Six Sigma background that we want to eliminate before we automate. So we always start from like a process standpoint. Is that a task you even need to be doing, or should you be doing it? Should you be looking at a co-sourcing partner or something else? If you do need to do it, then is that something that we can bring some type of automation or AI to that? In tax, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. A lot of what we do in tax is we put things into categories. Once they're in a category, the tax treatment is almost automatic, but it's trying to figure out and decipher which category does something go into. So it could be, again, we're looking at something like sales and use tax or VAT. If you know what product group something is in, that's going to automatically drive what the tax rate should be. If you're looking at fixed assets, knowing what asset class it is automatically going to drive the life and depreciation method. So there's a lot of low-hanging fruit, and the AI, both traditional and Gen AI, is pretty good, is pretty mature at going after some of these categorization challenges. So those are, there's a lot of them, low-hanging fruit, and it's a very good place to start. The benefit of starting with something like that, it allows the broader organization, IT, to work through what some of their policies are around IT. And it's also something that gives you a measurable example of the benefits of AI. So it helps, by starting there, it helps drive the business case, and the organization can begin seeing real ROI that can then lead to bigger and more ambitious programs, which is kind of the level three, which is what I'd call more of the transformative AI. Most companies in the survey Dave's mentioned a few times here have said that they're in the beginning stages. Almost everybody's kind of in the beginning stages. Not many have gotten to that transformative stage. I view these as kind of stepping stones to get to the point that we can go after some of the bigger things that will be truly transformative.
When companies think about how they can help to make sure their employees are feeling confident and supported in using these AI tools, what would your advice be to them?
I think it's learning and development. And I'm working through that myself. I had Microsoft Copilot training yesterday, right? It's something that I'm regularly investing in. I use it with my email. I use it with my PowerPoint. I'm having these coaching sessions now once a month. And so I think it's really important to take your people along on the journey, get them comfortable with AI, how to use it, and get them experimenting, and then continue that training. So you really need to take the people on the journey with you. And, you know, as Darren was noting, the value here is huge. If you think that tax functions, right, spend 60% of their time on data, organizing data, manipulating data. And as Darren noted, AI could classify property by the right fixed asset table, could classify things properly for VAT. It could label your data so you had access to the data. That's going to drive tremendous efficiency. And if I can reduce that 60% down to 20%, now I've just freed up a lot of time to do supply chain planning, to do tax planning, to look at legislative changes, to deal with tax authorities, to be a better asset to the organization. So I think key takeaway is taking the people on the journey with you, investing in them, and having really good learning and development programs around AI.
Such great advice. Thank you so much, both of you. Clearly extremely knowledgeable in this area. And I love that you're, you know, at the cutting edge of helping companies go on this journey in this new, what seems like a new area, but we're learning a lot really rapidly. So thank you. Now, whenever we do have guests on the show, we have two rapid fire questions that we like to ask. So are you ready? I'll start with you, Dave. What is the hallmark of a mature finance team when it comes to how they operate?
An optimal function is always looking at the future and developing a plan, right? Things change so rapidly, and actually having a view of your operating model. How do I drive efficiency and effectiveness today? But then also looking 3 years out, what's happening to talent? What's happening to legislation? How can I leverage AI? What are all of these developments? And so I say a strategic function is solving today's problems, but they're also looking forward 3 years and developing a plan so they're not surprised.
And how about for yourself, Darren?
Well, I think there's got two attributes I'd focus on. One is flexibility, and the other is really understanding how their role contributes to the bigger picture. With all the changes that need to be made to be nimble and help drive efficiencies across the organization, we have to break down those silos. So we do want people that specialize in areas, but it's really critical, and companies that do this well, they understand both upstream, the upstream processes, as well as what they're doing and how that impacts the downstream.
And next one, Darren, what is your go-to strategy to stay productive during the workday?
My go-to strategy is to try to remove distractions. And that could be closing down Teams, closing down Outlook or something else, but minimizing the distractions that I have, putting my phone on into focus mode. But in this digitally connected world, I think one of the biggest challenges that I have right now is just how many things compete for my attention. And so actually taking some analog ways of removing some of those distractions often helps me focus and be productive.
Excellent advice. I'm going to need to get some tips from you on how to do that. And how about for yourself, Dave? What helps to make you more productive?
Very similar to Darren. It's all about focus, right? For me, I like to be in the office or at a client site. I'm turning my phone off, getting rid of the distractions. I try to spend as much of that thinking and concentration time in the mornings and maybe do more of the calls in the afternoon and really come in, turn off all the electronics and focus in on what I'm doing and really crank it out. So it's all about focus and getting it when I'm fresh.
Thank you both so much for joining me. I find, you know, tax is often one of these underappreciated areas of the business, yet so critical. And I really appreciate you sharing some insights and helping to shine a different light on the function and how we should be thinking about it as businesses. So thank you for your time. Want to learn more about today's discussion? Check out the resources in our show notes. Don't miss out on future episodes. Subscribe to The CFO Show on your favorite podcast platform. For The CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. See you next time.